Thank you. I would like to remind all participants today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time.
So good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening to for wherever you're located in the world. Mark, thanks for sending along the agenda yesterday, and I see in your green box that you again noted that the call will probably be a little bit shorter than normal simply because of the amount of work that's going on right now in the subgroup lists and the milestones that we've committed to in terms of providing draft documents from those groups to the larger group. So that being said, let me move on to acknowledging the folks that are on the phone. Got Tatiana, Joe St. Sauve, Mark McFadden, Susan Prosser, John McCormick, Barry Cobb, Derek Andre, Rod Rasmussen, Jonathan Frakes, Vladimir, Mikey O'Connor, and John Levine. Have I missed anyone? Seeing none. Moving on into the agenda. You know, the public comment period on the concept paper actually closes today, and Mark and I have been talking about the comments that have been received so far, so I thought it would be good for Mark to spend a little bit of time walking through the highlights of what we've heard so far. I don't know if folks have had time to read them, you know, read the specific remarks, but Mark, why don't you go ahead and run through, you know, an overview, and then we can, you know, chat amongst the group for a bit if we like.
Sure. No problem. Well, like Craig said, the public forum proposed this evening, or at least this evening my time, and so far, there have been 7 postings to the public forum. One of them is a duplicate, but there really are 6 comments. By and large, I would say as a general remark that many of the comments are supportive of a model that combines a standardization approach where the output of the zone file producers is standardized and delivered in a standard way with something that makes things, some delivery mechanism that makes things easier for the receivers of the data, the consumers of the data. Briefly, there's one comment that is different from the other 5, the most recent one that's in there. I would say also that many of the people who have responded or posted into the public forum have indicated that a modest fee of some sort is not objectionable. There's one outlier to that, the most recent one. So let me briefly hit the highlights, sort of in the order in which they were entered into the public comment forum. Mike Vallage was the first person to put a comment in the forum, and what his interest was primarily was security issues related to zone file provision. What he was particularly interested in were the cases where a particular registry operator did not want to make the zone file available. And he cited some examples both from the business sector and also both from the public sector and the private sector of cases that he thought that uniform access to the zone file wasn't appropriate. And he hoped that the zone file access advisory group would consider that. Those security concerns apparently are something that Mike has raised before, and so his takeaway was that the bilateral approach that the advisory group has come up with is probably the mechanism that's most likely to meet his security concerns. Chuck Gomes also talked a lot about costs. His comments was wide-ranging. It was probably the longest comment that was put into the public forum, but I would say about 75 or 80% of his comment, which he wrote personally, he was not writing it on behalf of his employers, was related almost entirely to cost issues. And he reflected on the fact that the repository model and the proxy models seemed to be extremely expensive. One of the things that he noted was that in those cases, you'd probably have to reinvent a 24/7 customer support facility. He also made a short note towards the end of his comments about funding, and he objected to the idea that registry fees could be used to fund the operations of a centralized SoCal access provisioning facility. Mike Secord was the third person. I should also make a note here that if you look into the public comment area, Chuck Gomes has two postings. It's the second posting that is the one to read. Mike Secord is a web hosting company operator, web host operator, and he felt that the current system was actually just needed to be tweaked and standardized, and that would be sufficient. In fact, I think the final quote or the quote in the second to last paragraph of his comment is that the system does need standardization, but beyond that, beyond the standardization for the end users, whatever happens ought to be what's best for the registries. In his comments, outlined some problems that he saw with the clearinghouse and proxy models. So this was slightly shorter than Chuck's or Mike's, but it's interesting that once again, it was another person who supported standardization. Henry Kombrick also wrote that he felt that the current system didn't put a lot of demands on either the producer or the consumer. He said that he felt that the burden on everyone was pretty low. He suggested moving forward on a path where there was as little change to the model as possible. And again, he was another person who supported standardization and the enhanced bilateral model. He also made some suggestions. He was very, very strong on the concept of how the data was provisioned. For instance, he's a very strong proponent of providing TIFF files. And one of the things that he said at the very end of his comments was that a nominal annual fee would be perfectly reasonable as to him, and he identified himself as a consumer of the data. Ken Greenwood was the only person who actually wrote in as a representative of their organization. And his main issue in the public comment area was consistency across the zone files. He thought that the real problem with the zone files was that they were different depending on who you got them from. He also had some questions about the tiered approach to funding. He didn't quite understand what we had put into the concept paper. He thinks that that anything other than the nominal fee would be inappropriate. The nominal fee would be what was needed. He also made a point right at the end of his comments that he felt that transaction-based approaches to funding didn't make any sense. The most recent of the comments, and the last of the six, is by someone named Jorge Montesario. And he had a completely different view of zone file access. He wanted to see all burdens, all limitations removed. He wanted to see all zone files made available to anyone who wants them under no contractual obligation whatsoever. He thinks that there should be no limitations on party distribution of the zone files. He thinks that the frequency of updates is currently wrong. He thinks that they should be updated much more often. And he also suggests two changes in the area of transport. One is to ensure that there are digital signatures on every zone file, and then also using Tor as the vehicle for doing the distribution. One of the things to say here is that a pretty common theme throughout the public comment is that a lightweight approach seems to be what the people who have posted to the public comments are interested in, and standardization is a common theme, except for that last comment. There are, as I said, six comments currently in the public comment area, and I wouldn't be surprised if there are some here that come in on the last day. That often happens in public comments. What Craig asked me to do was sort of take a look at what was there and provide a summary of what we've heard in the public comment period, and I hope that helps. And I guess Craig and Rod and Vladimir, I'll stand aside unless there are any questions.
Thanks, Mark. That was really helpful. Any discussion on the floor from the floor about the comments?
This is Vladimir. I can say that the registry's constituents, the registry stakeholder group, is going to file the comments today. And I also expect that there may be some other parties that will provide comments in the last minute. So I think we may wish to discuss it further in the next call.
Yeah, that makes sense, and I fully expect that they're going to commenters that come in, you know, in the last 12 hours. It's always the case.
Yeah, this is Tom Barron. I think there's some interesting perspectives coming out of these public comments that we'll have to look at and see if we want to incorporate into the document.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
This is John. Is it useful for those of us who are participating in this process to put in comments to document our opinions, or do we figure that they'll show up anyway?
John, this is Mark. I think it's always valuable to, even if you're a member of the advisory group or a working group in the GNSL, I think it's always valuable to have your comments on the record, even though I know that by being a member of both the subgroup and the larger group, that you'll have influence in that way. It gives other people who are outside of the group a chance to understand your point of view and the kinds of ideas that you're contributing. So I always think it's valuable.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right, Mark. That's right.
Hey, this is Derek. I think the last comment about the possibility of using a torrent is actually interesting. I don't know if it's feasible, but it's an interesting way of thinking about distributing the traffic, you know.
It would be interesting to try some experiments. I'm not sure how well torrents work for files that are frequently updated.
Yeah, that is true.
For one of the non-technical guys on the phone, can you explain what that means?
Oh, this is the famous BitTorrent that you've been reading about in the papers because Comcast hates it so much. It's basically a peer-to-peer file sharing system, and although it's mostly used for ripped off movies and porn, it also turns out to be a pretty good way to distribute distributions of operating systems and stuff. It's just everybody who participates in it has pieces of the files and they offer it to everybody else. So you can in fact download stuff very quickly, but it's sort of what you need to seed it with initial copies, and if you've got enormous files that are changing twice a day, I'm not sure you can seed it fast enough to make the torrent work effectively.
Yeah, this is Vladimir. I'm afraid we are solving a problem which is a bit different, and actually optimizing traffic is a part of a problem, and to my opinion, it's a small part of the problem, whereas the bigger part is administration, entering into agreements, change management, security, and so on.
Want me to start on standardization now?
I think that's a good segue, John, right into item number 3 on the agenda, which is the subject of standardization.
Okay. Well, after a lengthy break over the weekend to eat all our Easter candy, we've had some robust discussion this week, starting with some proposals I put out. And it took us a while to get our terminology straight. For example, it wasn't entirely clear to everyone that in fact there are variations in the format of a zone file that are all perfectly legal and they're all perfectly standard, but they're all different. I think we have that pretty well straightened out. There was a lot of discussion about, do we want a single standard zone file format? I mean, I suggested what I thought my favorite format would be, Jonathan suggested that given that there are a couple of formats that are in wide use, in particular the ones that VeriSign uses, perhaps we could pick two or three of the most common ones and say and tell people to use those, which I think would be a reasonable alternative. I mean, there are. I mean, if people want, I can go into some of the details of why you would pick one standardized format over another. But basically, the goal is to make it as easy as possible to parse without having to write the entire complicated parser that a DNS server uses. We had some discussion of security issues where basically Dave was on one end who wanted to specify a lot of stuff for security, and I was on the other end claiming that I haven't seen any problems, so we don't need to change anything. I don't think we have any consensus on that yet about whether we need to standardize the way that passwords and stuff are generated. But let's see. There was considerable discussion about sending out differences. There was, again, a lot of differences of understanding of what diffs would mean. Would it mean the literal text changes from one edition of the file to another, or would it pick out like just the name servers, which some consumers find particularly interesting, or would it be something else? And one question that just came up a day or two ago that I asked that I haven't gotten an answer on is, to what extent do people depend on the current format of the zone files? That is, if, you know, let's say we picked some wonderful format that's easy to parse but is different from what anybody is using now. Would that mean that everybody's tools would break and they'd all hate us? I mean, because if, for example, you're only downloading Common Net, then there's only one format you understand, and for those people, life is already standard. And let's see, and the last topic I have here is, how do you identify the names, simply the server names, where you would download the zone file from? You can't really, I mean, there was some thought about picking a fixed name within the zone. You can't really do that because for the existing zones, any fixed name you would pick is already gone. There was some suggestions of using DNS server records, which I don't think got much traction. And this morning I sent out another straw man that says, just like there is a domain whoisservers.net that has an entry for each whois server, so if you want to like know where the who is server for .coop is, you look for coop.whoisservers.net. So as an example, I set up zfaservers.net. So if you want to find the zone file server for .coop, you can now look at coop.zfaservers.net. And I said that if we like that, ICANN would presumably maintain that zone for the benefit of both all the registries, so they would only have to tell ICANN once what the server was, and for all of the consumers, so they would have a single place to look. And I think that's what I have now. I mean, at this point, it's mostly been arguments, but I think I do see it's converging, and I don't think it'll be a big problem to get our report to get a reasonable report out on time. If anybody this is my opinion. If people think I am lying, I hope they will correct me.
John, this is Jonathan.
Yeah,
I think you did a great summary, and there was one thing that. I think Francisco Arias and I had sort of floated was, if we are considering some of these formats, we probably need to take into consideration a variety of types and classes of records that could be contained within a zone file. Just considering it could be a dozen or so years before something else comes out of this, that there might be some formats that contain that, or some zone innovation that might contain such records.
Right, that is a good point. That basically argues for making the format as explicit as possible. Basically, put in explicitly every field, even if there's currently a default, because somebody might do something different later. I think that was sort of the gist of what we agree of our discussion on that.
This is Vladimir. Sorry, who else wanted to speak?
Hi, it's Mark. I'd like to ask Vladimir. Go ahead.
Barry as well, please, in the queue.
Yeah, okay, Mark, go on, please.
Look at what you've done, John. Caused the conversation. One of the things that you might think of in terms of standardizing the server names is to actually put them into .ARPA and have IANA manage them. So as part of the delegation of new TLDs, one of the parts of the process of that is to create something like the name that you were talking about, say, coop.zfa.arpa or something like that. That way they would have a standard name and in a place that, you know, in terms of the naming mechanism, you could completely rely on.
If ARPA were willing to do that, if IANA were willing to do that, that would be fine. I think we would need an RFC to document that, but I could certainly push that through because I don't think the IETF would object.
I'd be willing to help with that on the IANA side.
Okay.
Can one of you put that out on the list, and then we can engage the right IANA folks to maybe get them involved in that particular conversation. Or Mark, you do some of the direct IANA. Why don't you ought to follow up with Kim or Barbara or
right.
Or Dave.
Yeah, I'll talk to Kim about that. I think that's the person to talk to.
Yeah, if you could do that and share what you learn before the next call on the list, that would be great.
Okay, we'll do that.
Barry?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. This is Barry. I definitely am really keen on the standardization of the addresses. I think that's going to be a pretty big win. I'd just like to kind of go back to your summary real quick. You had mentioned something, and I'm going to use my own language, but something about kind of like a single one-stop shop for the zone files or where the servers are located and that ICANN would be responsible for managing that. Can you just either repeat what you said and or expand on that a little bit, please?
Yeah, what I want is basically a single place to find out what the addresses of the servers are. Because I mean, at this point, the servers all have different names, and it is a challenge to find out what they are. And in one case, the server doesn't even have a name. It only has an IP address. So ICANN would simply manage the list that says, if you want the zone file for .foo, here's the address of the server you downloaded from. They wouldn't be managing the data or anything. This would just be the name of the server from which you would get the data.
Okay, great. Thank you for clarity. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyone else?
Yeah. I mean,
this is Rod. I just had one question on things that may have been discussed in the subgroup. Was there any discussion about the potential for alternative zone file formats that would be for specific purposes? For instance, we talked at some point about having just a list of the domains that are delegated within the zone for those who didn't want to download name servers and things like that. So it would be an alternative format beyond the standard format.
Not really. And not speaking for the group, but just for myself, I think if people want to do that, I would rather do it by allowing basically proxy service, so that party A could download the server, could download the data, and then be allowed to transfer it to party B, who also had an agreement, rather than attempting to come up with all of the possible formats that people would use. Because it was quite clear in the discussion that different people want different stuff. Some people just want the domain. Some people want the name servers. Some people want the glue. You know, some people, I'm sure once we start doing DNSSEC, some people are going to be looking at the crypto stuff. So I don't think it would be likely that we could standardize a set of variant versions that would satisfy enough people to be useful.
Yeah, and just basically standardize the main one and then come up with a different way of getting those different ones, whether it's through some of the models we've proposed or potentially some sort of third-party service.
Right. And also, I sent out a note saying that my assumption is that a lot of people are using sort of standard Unix-style text processing tools to manage these zone files. So if we come up with a format that for example, that makes it easy to pick stuff out with grep, that would make it, you know, somewhat less burdensome for people who just want to look for a particular kind of records to do it. I mean, currently, for about two-thirds of the zone files, grep will do it, and for a few of them, they won't.
This is Vladimir. I think it makes sense to do as little processing on the zone files as possible. Ideally, I would prefer if the zone files were uploaded unaltered from the DNS server. if I'm not mistaken, bind files are just the files that are that bind uses are actually just text files. So because if we do any text processing, we are in a risk of losing the quality of being authoritative for the zone. Therefore, I would prefer not to discuss any changes within the zone file, but rather discuss the system of transportation, the protocols, the naming conventions, compressing conventions, and so on.
Well, if I can sort of clarify the discussion a little bit, all of the files that people are, all of the zone files that are distributed now are in fact in bind format. However, since the bind format has evolved over 25 years, it turns out that there's a lot of different ways you can represent the same zone in different text formats. And in particular, bind allows you to leave out a lot of fields and have them default to either what was on the previous line or the name of the zone that you're in or something like that. So all the suggestions are basically saying it'll be the same data. It would still be bind format. But basically, the suggestions would be to make all of the fields that are optional explicit, just to make it easier to do text processing while still being the same bind data for the same zones.
This is Rick Wilhelm. Isn't this drifting a bit from what I thought we were talking about, is the model, which was more of a standardize the agreements? And isn't this getting a little bit more towards standardize the agreement, standardize the process for getting signed up, and getting into more towards content again?
Eric, I think that's a good point of order.
Well, I think that what we're basically looking at is, I mean, the agreements are all the same already, but the questions are, for example, you know, do you download by FTP or from a web page, or for that matter by Axfer? And if you do it by FTP, is there a fixed file name? We had some stuff for that. Nobody's proposing to make any semantic changes to the contents of the zone.
Yeah, but we can
process them the same.
Yeah, all those things that you just talked about, they're all external to the file.
Yeah.
The file's payload.
Yeah. I mean, if people don't want us to mess with the file, we can certainly, you know, take that as a separate part, so you could accept one part and not the other without having them overlap.
I think that's a pretty big, I think the inside or outside the file is a pretty big boundary. And I would say that why don't we try and solve the outside the file problem first before doing FOpen.
Okay.
That's a suggestion from, you know, just one participant.
Well, it certainly makes sense to separate them, so we don't have because they're basically separate issues.
So that sounds like something good to capture in this draft report that, John, you're going to circulate sometime early next week. Not report's not the right word, but just some type of summary document of what the group has done. I think it's good to note it there and use it as a point for ongoing discussion, you know, as we finalize that bit of work.
Okay. This is Rob. I'd say that we definitely want to, the separation of issues is important. I think that the standardization of the file is certainly, though, something we've been talking about along the way. We need to at least come up with whether or not we're going to do it or not, as a suggestion, we need to come up with a standard that works so that we can proceed that way if we want to.
Yeah, because that's a good point. When we look at getting this broadly accepted by the larger community, which includes the registries, if talking to them about making changes in the way that they name their files and the way they provide access is one thing, because it's, you know, largely going to be done at the quote unquote shell scripting level. When you talk about changing the content, it gets into a whole different discussion with them.
And keep in mind that the focus of this is going forward with, you know, potentially hundreds of new registries, and if we have legacy registries that may have some differing formats, that might be something we can live with. But, you know, having 200 new formats would be a problem.
Yeah, understood, except for the fact that the I shouldn't say except for the fact, but we should consider the fact that many of the new registries are going to be run by the existing operators, and so therefore, what gets done for the new ones will necessarily entangle code bases that are currently in production.
This is Vladimir. For me, the whole point of Zone File Access Program is publicizing the authoritative data, and it's really not providing a good service for consumers. It's not providing the data in a way that can be easily processed. It's completely not the point. I see the goal of the program as to publish the data that is authoritative for a TLD.
Okay. I mean, I think it's probably worth saying, if you're worth following up on Jonathan's suggestion, that here's three widely used formats now, so pick one of them and do the same thing. So at least, which I think would minimize the work on both sides.
So I think we've spent probably enough time on item number three, and okay. Obviously the work will continue on the list, and we'll see something from John and this group early next week. Moving on to item number four, which is the subgroup that Rod has been leading on the cost issues. Rod, do you want to take over for a bit?
Sure, thanks. Unfortunately, we don't have quite as far progress made as John had, but we have made at least some. Got a straw man model out to the group, and we've gotten a few comments back, mainly questions on it. I was going to publish the model to the wider task force, but I wanted to get a few more comments from the subgroup members to better round out the group, the bit first. So I'll look towards hopefully getting a few more comments from my sub-team members there and then getting it out to the group probably tomorrow. One of the things that was exposed by what I put together a straw man and put out to the group, but one of the things that exposed was, I think, an assumption in the original model that kind of got overlooked a bit, that started driving a major part of the cost when you start divvying up the models. And what I tried to do was expose the costs, inherent costs, of running systems under the different models, which would be borne by either, you know, and three of them with some sort of a centralized model, versus what the registries themselves providing data would be, or what they would have to absorb. So you had some fixed costs and you had some variable costs depending on number of consumers and size of data files. So try to split those all up and try and expose some of those hidden costs that currently the registries are kind of just seeing in their overhead, I guess would be the best word for it, and that those hidden costs would be exposed if you had some sort of centralized operator that would have to take those on. The interesting thing that kind of I think where we may have missed it in the first version of the model was looking at actual data transfer volumes, because I was taking a harder look at those numbers and realized that we had several orders of magnitude problem. At least the comZone file, which tends to be about somewhere between 1 and 2 gigabytes per download, that's zipped. So that's a lot more than we had in the original model. If you take that times the number of consumers times daily downloads, that becomes a very massive amount of data transfer you have to do to support that zone in particular. So when you start playing with the models, that cost to support that, if you use the kind of the market value of data transfer numbers that we had in there, becomes very large, well over $1 million just for the comZone data transfer. currently, that's, you know, as far as from what we've heard from VeriSign and others in the registry field, those costs are kind of dwarfed by the other costs that they have because they're providing the actual access to that. So that the zone file part of that is just a small portion. They probably have also very good deals on data transfer, I would assume. Probably better than you can pay at the quote retail rate at Amazon, which is what we're using as a comparison. So there's some mitigating factors in there. But even with that, you end up running into this issue where you have very large zones versus smaller zones that tend to skew data access costs, transfer costs, which, you know, kind of shapes the debate a bit about how you'd want to, if you want to use some sort of centralized model, which way you'd want to go, because you have inequalities amongst the amount of support you'd have to provide for particular zones. So that was one of the things that was coming out of the model pretty clearly. So that, I thought that would be appropriate to raise for this wider group discussion at this point. Other than that, there were some assumptions about fixed costs and what's appropriate to include in there, and trying to account for different levels of overhead based on the number of participants looking for particular zones or not, and how that translates and cuts through. Either, you know, in the various centralized models, you have to support. You have different levels of support the registries would have to provide to that centralized provider. So there's some assumptions there. But hopefully we'll get that model out here tomorrow after we get some more comments, and everybody can tear into it from that point. So I'll throw it open for any questions or comments at this point on that.
Yeah, this is John. Yeah, no. This is John. I've been looking at the model, but basically, it's so large and complicated. It's going to take a while to get my arms around it and see whether I see to what see kind of whether I have any holes to poke at it. You know, and I agree with your point that the comm zone is so much bigger than everything else. That there's a certain number of analyses about that where basically you can just ignore everything else and say, well, you know, the comm zone is a gig and a half, and everything else is the noise.
This is Barry. I've been kind of reviewing the model some as well, and I haven't been able to formulate all my thoughts to respond back to the team, but it does beg the question as to what the model would look like without the influence of the comm, and if we can maybe simplify it somewhat, or after we finish our numbers, be able to build it in a way that this is, you know, view A is what it looks like altogether. View B is what it looks like without the big influence. Because I think really what we're trying to hit at is, especially in the new GPLD spaces, you know, if we're looking at 500 GPLDs, what's that really going to look like? Or 1,000, you know, after round two, et cetera. Thank you.
My thought on it, when I started seeing those numbers popping out, was that you might end up with a bifurcated system where you have you'd be able to provide some sort of a centralized model of some sort for smaller registries that don't want to make the investment, and you know, for others that have very large data needs. You know, they can continue doing so, or if you go into that position and you want to do that as well. So it certainly, from a costing perspective, started pushing my thought process towards more of a hybrid model. But, you know, that's just one person's opinion looking at it. We'll get some more input here on that soon.
Okay, shall we move on to item 5?
Yeah, that's a good idea, Vlad.
Craig, would you like to say a few words on the funding subgroup?
Sure. So item 5 is the formation of the subgroup on talking about funding, and there's a an address that's been set up for this, zfa-funding@icann.org. Right now I've only subscribed Vladimir and Mark and myself to it, but the purpose of this subgroup is to start to delve into models or a combination of models for funding the model or a combination of models that we come up with. You know, we've talked about tiered funding, we've talked about transactional funding, we've talked about it maybe being coming, you know, maybe funding coming from some element of the registry fees, pay for it. We've talked about some nominal fee, you know, a variety of ways to look at, you know, how do we pay for something that we currently don't have. So we kind of view the work that would come out of Rod's group in terms of costs as the driver for helping get our head around the funding issues. I think because we're not quite there yet on the cost elements, I think it'd be a little bit hard to get started on funding. With that said, you need a few folks who are willing to take this on. So if anyone is on the call right now willing to chime up, I'll certainly add your name to the list. It should be from advisory group and not an ICANN staff person, you know, driving the subgroup. Do we have any takers?
Craig, this is Rick. I'll participate. I'm probably not capable of driving it.
According to the milestones that we circulated, that were circulated a couple of weeks ago, the first funding model draft plan is supposed to be delivered by the 20th. Let me just make sure I have that date correct. Apologies. Yeah, by the 20th for discussion on the 22nd. So if folks would rather chime up on the list about their willingness to be part of this group, that's great. And as soon as we get some additional information that comes out of Rod's work, I think we can start to get started on that. There's probably not a whole lot more to add on that just yet, but Adamir and Rod, feel free to chime in if you like. Hearing no chiming. Moving on to item. So every week, Vladimir and Rod and Dave and Mark and myself, we have kind of a pre-planning call to pull together the agenda, talk about, you know, issues that we want to raise on the larger group call, which is obviously today. And one of the things that Vlad suggests is that we probably ought to start to pull together an outline of the materials that are needed for the app. That is, What's the document look like that we need to give to ICANN by the 15th? And we talked about a couple of times. What we write does not necessarily become the verbatim text for the guidebook. The way I recall Kurt was explaining it to the group probably about a month ago is that, you know, we're going to develop our paper with our ideas and our recommended model and maybe some high-level views to the standardization and funding, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then the writers, the folks on the new GTLD program team that are actually drafting the applicant guidebook, and that's generally been led by Karen Lentz, they will take what we produce and whittle it down appropriately for inclusion in the guidebook. And again, I think what Kurt Pritt said and what has been my belief all along is that what will actually go into the guidebook is we're probably talking about a few paragraphs of high-level text that will basically point out to applicants and to prospective registry operators, you know, what the obligations are to them under this clause within the registry agreement. I think some of the heavier lifting will probably come this version of the guidebook, and those are the implementation details. That is, how do the guidelines in the guidebook actually get implemented? So there'll be work that continues, you know, after May 15th on details. So I think Vlad's idea of pulling together this outline is good. Unfortunately, we just couldn't get it done for today's call. So, you know, Mark and I will work on it in the next few days and get something out to the list. And we'll be able to talk a little bit more about it next week. Vlad, since this was your idea, did you want to say a little bit more about that now?
Yeah. Given the tight deadlines, I thought this approach, the iterative approach rather than waterfall approach, may work better. So by that I mean that at any point in time we're going to have some draft. So at the first stage it will be a bad draft, then it will become better and better with every iteration. So that was my idea. And if someone could volunteer to create the first draft, I think at least we are eliminating the risks of getting it wrong, right? So any severe drawbacks will be addressed at the early stages. I think that's a better way to go.
Vladimir, this is Mark. I think that Craig and I are willing to take a first cut at that draft, especially since I think Craig and I are going to talk to Karen about to make sure that what we come up with as an outline actually meets her needs. So that's one of the things that's important here. Like Craig says, I don't expect that what we produce will go in verbatim into the applicant guidebook. But what we want is enough clarity in the document so that Karen doesn't have to come back and do a lot of dialogue with the advisory group to get the material for the guidebook done.
Yeah, Mark, that sounds right. As you were the kind of the primary author of what became to be known as the concept paper, I would think that ICANN would have the pen in developing the outline, certainly open to suggestions on what ought to be in it, but the pen to developing the outline and also developing the ultimate submission to ICANN, you know, penning it first, but then using the list to, as Vlad said, take it from bad, what we turn in.
Yeah, and I'm very comfortable with Vladimir's idea that this is an iterative approach, that in subsequent discussions and conference calls, and as the work of the small subgroups gets closer to completion, that it just simply becomes better over time until we hand it in.
Great.
There's not anything else on the agenda, but I did want to raise another item, and that is on our list of milestones. April 29th is the day where we're supposed to come to group consensus on what the model is, or the combination of the models will be for the report that's going to go to ICANN. So today is the 8th, so we've got 21 days and lots of work happening in the subgroup to come to consensus position on what are we going to recommend. And we took that, Mikey put out that straw poll, I don't know, a few weeks ago, and a handful of people responded. I think Vladimir, you chimed in that you didn't think that we were at the point yet where it was the right time to take a vote. I'm just wondering, do people who are on the call now, based upon what you're seeing on the list and the discussions that we've had, are folks starting to get more comfortable with the notion of saying we ought to go in a specific direction? And if you are, I'd welcome you to chime up on the phone and talk about it for a moment.
This is Barry. May I start, please?
Yes, please, Barry.
Sure. I would just like to say I was going to just bring this up at the end of the call is, you know, because we are coming close to that deadline, and now that you brought up in reference to the survey, I was going to say I kind of liken it to the analogy of an airplane that's trying to reach its final destination but needs to shed some baggage to make sure they've got the fuel to get there. And by results of the survey, it's pretty close that there's two of the four models that we should really start focusing our attention on. So I was just going to, you know, either ask the group if we can maybe try shedding the two that we don't think are going to be as completely that meet all the requirements and benefits that we're looking for, and really just focus all of our energies on the two and or one or combination. Particularly, I have my own opinion about what it should probably be, but you know, I'd like to open that up for sure.
Hey, Mikey, are you still with us? He was on the call before, but I don't know if he has dropped.
I am. It just took me a while to get off mute.
Mikey, do you recall how many people responded to the first survey?
Give me one more iteration of conversation, and then come back to me, and I'll go look in the meantime and let you know.
Because I think it'd be interesting to see how many people responded the first time, and then to put the survey out again with the understanding that, you know, the results of the survey will be used to kind of pick the direction that we're going to go. And it's obviously not consensus until we have a conversation about it, but I think we ought to put the survey out again. I think we ought to be able to say, you know, with some degree of certainty by next week, you know, what the survey results are and what the outstanding issues, you know, remain to be discussed, you know, moving towards that day of 29 April.
I'm on the survey now. Let me give you the latest results. We had 13 people reply.
That's pretty good.
Enhanced bilateral got 8 votes, and remember, you could vote for more than one, so this won't add up to 100%. It's 103% or something. So 8 votes for bilateral, enhanced bilateral. 2 votes for a repository. That was our least favorite. 3 votes for a proxy. That was our second least favorite. And 6 votes for a clearinghouse. So in rank order, it was bilateral, close behind it, clearinghouse, then quite a bit below that, a proxy model, and finally a repository model coming up last.
Mikey, can you tell how many people voted for both bilateral and clearinghouse models?
Or for any combination there, that for that matter.
It turns out that one person must have voted for some pair. It's harder for me to, on the fly like this, come up with which pair it was, but only one person voted for more than one.
I don't think you're right, because...
Yeah.
Well, we had 13 replies and 14 responses. That's how.
Well, I personally know I voted for 2.
That makes 2.
All right, well...
We have 19 responses. We have, if you sum up all the votes for each of the 4 options, we have 19. So there should be a bit more.
Smart. Guys are just so much smarter than me. Hang on a minute. Let me just see if I can figure out quickly how I read these. I think the answer is I'm not. So, Vlad, I'm looking at yours. And all I see is the enhanced bilateral. Barry voted for 2, bilateral and clearinghouse.
Yeah, Craig voted for the same.
Anonymous voted for a clearinghouse. David voted for enhanced bilateral.
Yeah, so I don't think that we necessarily need to go through all the different votes, but given that first vote was taken a month ago. There's been a good amount of discussion since then. Can we go ahead and put the survey out again in the next day or so with a response requested within like 2 days?
Craig, do you mean you want to reset the results and ask everyone to vote again?
Well, I want to keep what we had in the first survey, but I'd like to do another survey.
I think that's pretty easy to do. I'll take that action item.
Thanks.
I think I can just copy the survey and do it over again.
Yeah, I mean, all you do is have to give it probably a different name, and that way you know what Survey 1 and Survey 2 results are. And we also want to make sure that if folks are voting for more than one, that we somehow accurately count that.
Yeah, as I go through the details, I haven't used this particular tool very much, so you're right, there were several people that had multiples.
Well, we'll give you some more time to play with that.
Mikey, am I right that the three centralized models are mutually exclusive? So if we're talking about combinations, it's either bilateral plus something else.
Yeah.
So we can just...
At least in the few that... I had to flip through each response one at a time, and I didn't get through them all. But at least the ones that I looked at, it was always bilateral plus something. It was never...
Yeah, so we can do just seven options instead of four. Four individual ones and three combinations, bilateral, plus each of the three centralized.
Oh, yeah, I could do that. He said...
That's helpful suggestion, Bob. Yeah, you've got the four, and then you've got the three, then you've got the three combinations.
Yep.
Yeah, I can do that.
Thank you.
Get it out, PDQ. I'll try and get it out while we finish the call.
Well, I think we are actually winding down. A few action items for Mark and I out of this, actually Mikey too, with regard to the new survey, and John and his standard subgroup to get a document out by next Tuesday, and people still providing some feedback in Rod's subgroup, so then Rod could distribute the model or what he's prepared to the larger group for input. And then we've got the formation of the subgroup model on funding. And thanks, Rick, for stepping up to be a part of that. And I heard that you can't drive it. I understand that. If folks want to reply to me offline, and I'll probably just put out to the list, because there are a bunch of people who aren't on the call today, to see if anybody wants to participate and lead that effort. I actually don't have anything further to add. Mark, what might be good for you to do is, once the public comment period closes tomorrow, and you, closes today, and you finish tweaking your summary, why don't you go ahead and forward it around to the group, but it'll also be available in the forum, you know, once it gets closed.
Yeah, I guess what I can do that's easiest is I'll just pass a link to the list.
Yeah, good idea. Well, anything further from any of the members today? Hearing none, I think it was a really productive call, a lot of good work happening in the subgroups, and we'll continue to talk online and look forward to speaking with everyone again next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, all.